Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
This is your favorite jock, J. Michael. Michael for LA Talk Radio. And you know, I spend a lot of time going through and trying to find good shows on AM dial. And you know what? I can't find anything. So how about this? How about we try LA Talk Radio? You know, LA Talk Radio is the biggest and the best in LA, and they're .com. So we've got it all, from sports to music to self-help to just about anything, including talk. And right now we have the new writer's favorite show, The Writer's Block. So sit back, pour some more wine or coffee or tea or whatever, grab another box of chocolates and enjoy, because it all starts right now.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Russ Avison right here on LA Talk Radio.
I'm not even going to ask if you know what that song is.
I lived that song. I was married to the subject of that song.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
What was her name, Sue?
She's dead now, so I don't care. No.
Yeah, it's Donovan. That's from the Sunshine Superman album.
I remember that.
Yeah. Great album, incidentally. And I think it's a very appropriate song for this evening.
Yes.
Because this evening's guest, who is on hold, raring to come on board. And I got to tell you, officially, for the Writer's Block Thursday night shows, this is our fourth year anniversary. Of course,
woohoo!
We were here Tuesday on the actual fourth year anniversary for the Writer's Block one-on-one.
That's right.
With your friend, Chira and Neil.
I have to say, though, I was going to come in and say, gee, I only come on once a month, but it seems like I was just here the day before yesterday.
Oh, you were?
Yeah.
So I have a mea culpa. I understand that when I mentioned something about a stick on Lena's ass or butt. To those who are listening, it was talking about the character in the book, not Shira Thompson, who was sitting here next to me or was sitting here next to me. So
yes.
Had nothing to do with the actual person. Had everything to do with the character that was in the book. So that being said, all right. We have a guest tonight that is phenomenal. His story... Death. What's the name of it?
Death Dresses Poorly.
He's an author of genre fiction of all lengths. He's a part-time writing student at Athabasca University. He has been published in Flash Fiction. He's been all over the place. The guy is, he does a www.101words.org. You can find his stories here, as well as comedy site www.thecorrectness.com. His novels, of course, Death Dresses Poorly and Catching Hell Part 1, Journey, are available now. And I believe the second volume is available as well. He also writes for Hard Mode Games, and an upcoming IP is Mark Watson. He lives in Calgary, Alberta. And would you please welcome Mark to the Writer's Block?
Hello there, Mark.
Hello, Mark.
Hello. Hello. I'm not going to lie. When I heard the applause, I actually put my hand up and waved to nobody. That is true story.
But did you do the right, did you do the queenly wave?
No, I'm an energetic waver. I want to make sure you see me when I'm waving.
Oh, I see. Okay. Don't shoot me. Here, it's me.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that amazing introduction.
Well, actually, you wrote it, so if it's a lie, then it's on you, not me.
That is true. That is true.
We just finished your book. I mean, Russ finished it last night or this morning?
This morning.
Yeah, me too. And wow, what a great story. What a wonderful story. I just have to ask, though, from which part of your psyche did you pull that puppy out of? Because it was...
I pulled that out of two different places. I can tell you that the first chapter, so the first chapter involves a young man meeting a sort of enigmatic older man in O'Hare Airport.
Right.
And the kind of banter that they have going back and forth. That is an actual scene that played out almost word for word to me years ago when I was about the same age as Ethan, the main character.
Really?
So that is like a legitimate scene, other than Ethan is returning from his mom's funeral and my mom is still alive and I love her to death. She's my hero.
Uh-huh.
And then the rest of it came from, I had written, you had mentioned Catching Hell part 1 and 2. I actually wrote that first, and it took about 5 years of my life to write it, to edit it, to get it to a point where I was ready to put it out in the world. And after 5 years, I was just so done with that world and those characters. I love them. I'm proud of them. And I wanted to be anywhere else. And I wanted to write something that wasn't magic and fantasy and swords and technology and science fiction. And I wanted to write something that was very true to me. And that's where Death Dresses Poorly really came from. I like to say that it's me when I'm 20, meeting what I expect will be me when I'm about 50 or 55, and kind of the banter that those two versions of myself would have with one another. And that's kind of where it came from.
Gotcha.
Can you give us a little thumbnail sketch of the story, right, just so the listeners know what we're talking about?
Absolutely, absolutely. So Death Dresses Poorly is the story of 20-year-old Ethan, who is just returning home from his mother's funeral. He meets an enigmatic man who they just kind of ships passing in the night, and he goes to fly back home because he now lives in Seattle. And on his way back, the plane that he's on crashes, and he is the only survivor. And he then finds out that the man that he met is actually Death, who has been trying to recruit him to become the new Death. But as you can probably imagine, Death isn't very good at, like, interpersonal relationships and selling his job to someone. And Ethan, with everything he's been through, because his mother, she just died, but even when she was alive, she was very emotionally abusive. She was a drug and alcohol addict. And he is having none of whatever this man's selling. He's just broken free. And now to suddenly be saddled with, to go from one thing that was very important to him to something that's so monumental to the entire world, it's too much for him. And he's snarky and he's sarcastic. He's just trying to break free from the world, and Death is trying to pull him into this brand new role. And it's the story of the two of them as Death tries his best to be personable and sell Ethan on this job.
Right. It's almost like Death is stalking him. You know, it's like
very much so.
Yeah.
But I think also it's important to note two things. One is that the book is very humorous.
Extremely humorous.
But it's dark humor. But secondly, Death in this book, and I don't want to give anything away about him, except that it's not the traditional guy in the black robes and the sickle.
No.
It's a different altogether.
He dresses poorly.
Yeah, well, of course.
Yeah, he dresses poorly.
He does dress poorly.
And I love the comment when they're in a hospital room. And he says, Death just tells him, I wish you would just cooperate. He goes, what? Crashing an airplane into Puget Sound wasn't enough for you?
I mean, a lot of those kind of interactions, I'd like to think that that's exactly how I would say and talk and react in each of those. Like if I was giving all these different characters different voices in my giant epic science fantasy, then I definitely tried to go the other way with this one. And the humor is a big part of it, because one of the big things for me was that in those kinds of like life-changing situations, in those kinds of difficult times that people go through, so many people internalize it, and I'm not that. I absolutely come out and I make jokes, and I have a very dark sense of humor at times like that.
I never would have guessed.
No, well, I know, right?
Yeah.
But a way that I like to put it is, years ago, my grandmother, bless her, she passed away, and I was asked to give a eulogy, and I'm like, there's no way I'm doing this eulogy unless I can get a laugh out of a bunch of
mourners. I don't blame you.
I absolutely have to, because I knew that that's kind of what she would have wanted, and that's how I deal with things. I wasn't going to suddenly sugarcoat things any more than I had to. She was a wonderful woman, but I had to make people laugh because it's just who I am. And that kind of attitude comes forward in Death Dresses Poorly, only with a lot more swearing than I did in that room at that time.
Oh, yeah. Well, there was quite a bit of that in there.
But it fit.
It's part of the characters, and it's really great, especially Death, who's kind of a smartass in his own right.
He is. He's never had to do this before. Everybody he's ever needed... In this world, I can say that death is kind of cyclical. It passes from one life form to another. It doesn't even have to be a human being. It passes through all kinds of different living creatures.
Well, we don't want to say what death is. We don't want to say what character he is. I mean, there are so many spoiler alerts in this book that it's really hard to talk about because everything's a spoiler alert. So we just got to be careful what we say. But it's very, very funny in what Death originally was.
I think so. I think it was wonderful. Unique. It came from an honest place.
Oh, I'm sure it did.
So, you know, Mark, before we came on the air, Jim and I were chatting a little bit, and I asked Jim, I said, have you ever read The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? And he said, yeah. I said, there was... The book is nothing like that, except that it just drew me into that same kind of craziness, the way you presented it. Have you had anybody say that to you before?
As a matter of fact, I have, and I am completely humbled by being compared in any way, shape, or form to Douglas Adams. Mm-hmm. I love the Hitchhikers series in all forms of listening to the original BBC, watching the original BBC. I'm one of the few really big fans of the Martin Freeman movie as well. I love that. And I wasn't thinking that when I wrote this, but I've had, you're not the first, I'll say. I'm not going to say it's been like, oh yeah, everybody compares this, but I'll say that I have that comparison before. And I am honored to hear it. And sometimes I do describe it as like, it's like Douglas Adams, but with more swearing.
There you go.
but still has the same amount of craziness, I think.
Oh yeah. Oh, totally. Totally. I mean, it's the places they go in them, and you know, it's just, the conversations are just hoots. They're just, I mean, you know, you sit there and you laugh out loud at some of the things these guys are saying to each other, and each one is trying to piss the other one off.
And Death is
like begging this guy, please, you know, I want to retire. Take over for me, you know, get me out of here.
I do have to ask you, though, are you a fan of mushrooms? Because a lot of this was pretty out there.
I will say I'm not. I have done mushrooms one time, and I had a terrible allergic reaction to it, and I never touched it again.
Ah, okay.
See, yeah. I wouldn't even
admit that. No. This was my brain kind of going roughshod over itself. It was like my brain hitting the reset button. As I said, I spent 5 years writing Catching Hell, and love it, proud of it. Glad to get away from it for a little while. Mm-hmm. And just to kind of give you an idea of the frenzy that my brain was in to create Death Dresses Poorly, I wrote this in 6 weeks. And that includes the first round of editing. And when I did editing on Catching Hell, I was editing it for years, and I was getting opinions, and I was sending it out to people. And when I did Death Dresses Poorly, I edited a personal edit, basically just a copy edit, one time. And then I put it out there in the world. And I was just so happy with where it was. I felt that if I tried to do anything more to it, it wouldn't be true to what it was I was trying to accomplish in the first place.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Well, kudos to you, because that's a pretty astounding feat.
It's a pretty fun book. And for those of you who like, I don't know, death fantasy, I guess you call it, or whatever. What genre would you call this, Mark?
Urban fantasy, dark comedy.
Urban fantasy dark comedy. So okay, yeah. UFDC.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So for those of you who like urban fantasy dark comedies, this is the book to read. Death Dresses Poorly. And believe me, he does dress poorly.
When did you release this book? Because I did not see that.
October, I think.
Death Dresses Poorly was released in December of 2017.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
And it was the beginning of a very roller coaster year for me.
Ah.
It was kind of weird the way things worked because I had written Catching Hell first. Then I wrote Death Dresses Poorly. I had put Catching Hell Part 1 out there to get picked up, and it was, and I was super thankful for it. And it had the traditional journey of back and forth and lots of rejections. And then while it was out there and somebody picked it up, it was their publishing window was a year to 18 months. And in that same time, Death Dresses Poorly was written and picked up by someone whose publishing window was 6 months. So I wrote Catching Hell first. But Death Dresses Poorly was my first book, quote unquote.
Right. First published book.
First published book. Yeah. Yes, sir.
All right. So you said you were kind of, you're proud of your characters. You're proud of the genre you were writing in, but you were very glad to get away from it. So what are you spending your time writing now? What type of material?
Good question.
I'm really kind of mixing myself around right now. I have been kind of tossing around another kind of urban fantasy, something more of an urban thriller that I've been working on. I like to say that it's kind of a cross between the HBO show The Leftovers and the comic book soon-to-be TV show, hopefully they don't screw it up, of Why the Last Man. Like one of those ones where like something kind of extraordinary happens in modern society and how that modern society deals with it. And mm-hmm. I wrote a bunch of it and then I just kind of sat on it. And it was my work in progress was sitting at about 35,000 words, 40,000 words. And I only really feel like it's a 70,000 word story. And I've finally jumped back into it recently and I've immersed myself in that world. I honestly put it aside for like a year or so. And before that, as you mentioned in the lead up, I've been working with some good friends of mine out in Toronto for Hard Mode Games and being an environmental writer for a game that's a work in progress at the moment. So I spent a lot of time doing that on top of, I have a full-time job, I have two young kids, a beautiful wife, and I enjoy spending time with them. I am not a traditional gung-ho writer by any stretch. I love writing, but to me, I only ever really saw it as a hobby, as an escape for me. I'm not somebody who dreams of doing this full-time at any point in my life, and I admit things can change, but that's not where I'm at right now. I love what I'm doing. I'm going to continue to do it, but in fits and starts. So it takes me a while to get through doing something because I'm so busy doing other things.
Right. So you haven't given up your day job as of yet?
I haven't. I love my day job.
What is that, by the way? What do you do?
It might sound a whole lot less interesting than it is, but I am a corporate space planner for a large engineering company. So I like to say that I play Tetris with real people. I'm a puzzle solver. I move things around so that way they fit in the grand corporate scheme of the world. And it very much is that traditional corporate Dilbert style office building. For any of the listeners who don't know, the comic strip Dilbert is actually based on an engineering firm with a cubicle farm. And that's exactly what this is, but I love doing it. I work, my particular team is a small team. There's only about seven of us and we're all doing different things. And I've worked there for 10 years and I love it. And I don't want to change that. On top of the good old fashioned job security, I still enjoy the job and every day is a new day. So no reason to stop doing that, but
I don't blame you.
Every day at lunch.
Let me ask you though.
Oh, go ahead.
Would a $1 million advance on one of your books change your mind?
Probably.
I'm not offering, by the way.
I took that as a verbal contract personally.
So, well, he's in Canada. Mark, you have to remember.
Hey, sorry, I gotta go.
We just lost Russ.
It's a good question, and I really feel that that's a cross that bridge when I come to it kind of thing, because I'm not striving for that. Perhaps someday something similar might come across my lap and I'll be thankful if it does. And I'll kind of reassess things then, but
sure.
I'm no man who's like out there looking for the big fish contract.
Right.
I am happy with what I've got so far. I would be happy with that kind of exposure and success in the future, or even if it doesn't even get that far again, I would be able to walk away right now with my head held high, knowing that I accomplished what I wanted to do. I had one very simple goal when I started out, and it's been accomplished. So at this point, it's all gravy.
Well, now you have a legacy for your kids.
Exactly, exactly. And Catching Hell Part 1 is dedicated to my oldest. Part 2 is dedicated to my youngest. Death Dresses Poorly is dedicated to my wife. And for now, the stories that I've written are out there, and their names are out there, and where my heart was at when I put them out there is out there, and it will be for forever in some way, shape, or form. So it's a good start.
You know, it's funny you should say that because, well, not funny you should say that because we hear,
no, a lot pretty, of the, it's pretty funny.
A lot of the writers we talk to nowadays do say that, look, you know what, I don't write to be rich because that's, you know, I'm pragmatic enough to know that's not going to happen. But I write to put my story out there. I write to put, you know, so people can enjoy the stories. I don't have to get rich doing it. And I like that attitude because it gives you a much better story.
Oh, for sure.
I feel
for sure, and I've kind of written this and on some like nonfiction pieces and some writing advice pieces, just talking about things like writing goals and writing targets,
right.
and be they like actual like logistical ones, like writing 3,000 words a day, or if they're like I'm going to go out there and I want to try and sell 10,000 copies or whatever it is. I respect those kinds of goals, but I could never have them for myself. And for a lot of people I know, and I know a lot of people, at least in this local writing community and in kind of the writing community at large, smaller fish like myself, who that kind of attitude can be very damaging if right. You're not careful with it.
Right. Well, it tends to put you in a rush, and it tends to make you put out stuff that is not that good just to get the word count up.
Exactly. Exactly. And like for my big epic fantasy story, when it was all done, it was 250,000 words. But when I did Death Dresses Poorly, when it was all done, it was 50,000. And even that, I thought was like, well, that's probably more than it needed to be. And I cut it back a little bit. It was originally supposed to be a novella, honestly,
right.
And it just kind of took off on me a bit. I'm glad it went the way it went, though.
Well, that's what our engineer asked me. He said, is that a short story? I said, no, it's a novella. A novella is like anything around 40,000 words, less.
Yeah, and as I recall, Death Dresses Poorly clocks in somewhere around 47,000.
Yeah.
So I'm just jumping over that high bar, but barely. But if somebody called it a novella, I would not stand back aghast with my hand on my chest.
Now, this is a really good time to ask you this because we talk to a lot of – we talk to a writer a week usually. And they all – they mean everybody has got just a definite attitude about word count. But most of the writers now seem to want to keep the word count lower, the book shorter, and for airplane rides. And that's what we seem to hear a lot of. You know, we want them to buy the book at the airport in L.A., and when they get to Georgia, they're done with the book. You know, it's just
I feel I kind of wrote something. I like to call Death Dresses Poorly a weekend read. So, like, if you pick it up on a Thursday or Friday evening and you kind of give it a little bit of your time over the course of the weekend, you could probably get through it if I have engaged you enough by Sunday at dinner time.
Right.
It's not heavy lifting at all. And I didn't want it to be heavy lifting. I wanted it to be short and snappy and have the kind of attitude that I wanted to give it. And I did. So I completely understand that mentality. Did I do it on purpose? No, not at all. I would definitely say that this book falls into that category.
Right.
Yeah, it was a fun, easy read. I mean, I picked it up yesterday and read the whole thing by this morning,
right?
And thoroughly enjoyed it. As Jim and I were saying in the beginning, it just grabs you from the first couple pages. You're just like, wow, what?
But
what is the direction?
It doesn't leave you wanting more. You definitely ended the story, and your ending, incidentally, was phenomenal.
Oh yeah,
I mean, I did not expect that.
It was satisfying.
It was extremely satisfying, and I did not expect that, but it was really great to see the transition, and I love the ending. So kudos to you for the ending.
Thank you. I'm not spoiling anything to say. I wrote it with the intention of never making a sequel. And I think only like one person has been like, oh, you could write another one of these. I'm like, no, I don't want to. I wanted this to be open and shut. This is a closed story.
Right.
End of.
Well, I think, too, is so many times I will read something and it will get to the last two or three chapters and you feel like all of a sudden you're rushed into the ending.
They
and
like up.
They grab a lot of things, say, okay, here's how it ends.
Yeah.
And your book, I felt, really, almost from the beginning, sets up that you have the ending coming. You're right. Not quite sure where it's going to end.
Right.
But, you know, as far as, you know, the final outcome, but when you get there, everything led to that point. I don't feel like you were rushed or tried to, okay, I'm done writing this now, so I got an end.
Right,
got an
right,
end.
Right.
It just seemed like it was right.
Correct.
Yeah.
It was correct. Yeah.
And I'm glad that kind of the idea came across, because that, like, when I write, I'm very much a pantser. I know where I'm going to start. And the other thing is I always kind of know where I'm going to end. And then I write the story for what goes in between. And that's kind of the end of it. Like, so I always make sure that I have an ending. I mean, like, it's an old classic writing trope that make sure you know your ending before you start writing.
But that's right.
It really does help dictate the pace. It helps for the reader to believe that they have told a story where the ending is earned. It helps the writer make sure that they don't go too far off the rails. And I say that as a guy who wrote a 250,000-word book. I meant for it to be this huge, sweeping, epic thing, and it ended up being that. Of course, I had to split it in two because, guess what? Nobody wants to buy a 250,000-word book for a first-time author. Yeah. But it was a deliberate thing there, and it was a deliberate thing with Death Dresses Poorly, that here's my ending. I know exactly where I'm going. Let's see how long it takes for me to get there and make sure that I don't lose that rhythm, and I don't think I did. And by the sounds of it, you guys don't think I did either.
So no, I have to be honest that I think anybody that picks up this book that's got any kind of a sense of humor is going to really like it. Mm-hmm. Because it really is. It's got a comic flair to it that I haven't read in a book in a long time. So
because it was dry humor and it was
dark humor.
Yes. But I have to say, Mark, what you used a set of words there that really described your ending. You said that people, when they read it, they have to feel the ending was earned. And absolutely,
yes,
it was.
For sure. Absolutely, for sure.
Excellent.
So,
excellent.
Okay, we're done stroking you now.
Yeah.
that's okay. You can continue. It's all
Well, we're going to ask you some more questions. Right now, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with you shortly. So don't go away, and just hang tough. We'll be back with you in just a minute. When Creative Edge Publicity was founded in 2016, they immediately showed that they weren't the same as other publicity firms. They work closely with their individual clients' needs and goals and push harder to get them noticed. Creative Edge believes that communication is an important part of the partnership, and that model is how they have built their business. They collaborate and work with local, national, and international media outlets and organizations to meet their clients' goals, and of course, the Writer's Block is one of those. Creative Edge, it's your brand and your future. Mickey Mickelson and Avery Olive are the publicists, and you can get a hold of them on creativeedgepublicity.org. Or no, .com, I guess. Anyway, you can find them on Google, Creative Edge Publicity. Okay? I like that. All righty. Out West Shop launches 30 deals, 30 days. Shopping extravaganza. From now until June 16th, 2019, a new deal is posted on the Out West Shop Facebook page and on outwestshop.com. To browse all the specials, just enter the word deal in the search box. Limited quantity, don't dally. 50% of the retail price of each deal is donated to the musical trio The Cowboys Way in Diego Go Go in Diego Go Camp. Oh my God, Bobby Jean, really? In Diego Go campaign. It's a Cowboy I Will Be documentary. Okay, whatever that is. Questions? Call them toll free 877-340-9378. And remember, it's always a great day to go shopping out west. And last but not least, you know, if you're planning a trip and remember there's no way you can take your canine buddy, how about considering All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepover? That's right. All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepover is the premium place for your four-legged buddy to spend their time away from you. If you want a place where you know your buddy will be safe and have lots of attention, being able to play with other dogs, goats, sheep, horses, and more humans, then All Dogs Rule is the place for you. Acres of play space, grass, orange trees, and the gorgeous Sespe River, all with no stress. And extras if you want, just ask. When your dog returns home, you'll have to ask whose vacation was better. So check out their website at alldogsrule.com. And it's just exactly how it sounds, All Dogs Rule. Or give them a call at 805-524-1100. You can call in the studio tonight. You can talk to the owner. He's sitting right across from me, Russ Avison. Your dog will thank you. Yeah, right. Okay.
When I look out my window, many sights to see. And when I look in my window, so many different people to be. That it's strange, so strange. You got to pick up every stitch. You got to pick up every stitch. You got to pick up every stitch.
And we are back in the studio. It's now 7:31. We're on the phone with writer Mark Watson in Canada, and he's written a book called Death Dresses Poorly, and it's a coot. Russ and I have been talking to him about it tonight. And if you want to call and talk to Mark, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. Again, that number, 818-602-4929. Russ, you had a question.
Yeah. Hey, Mark, I'm really curious to know a little bit more about your epic novel, The Catching Hell 1 and 2. Just, just an idea about what the book's about, because if it's anything like this one, I would probably give you the 800 pages of my time to read it.
Well, I'm going to start by saying it's nothing like this one.
Okay.
Which is instantly a terrible sales pitch. they're totally different, but I will happily give you the rundown, and that is that.
Please.
Catching Hell, Part 1 and Part 2, is the story of two young men who have just returned home from a year away to find that their home has been destroyed by a robotic army. Now, this takes place in the distant future. I wouldn't even call it post-apocalyptic. We're well beyond that. And the world that they live in knows that things like magic and technology exist, but they have always kept it at arm's length. So there is Aryu, who's a young man with wings, who needs to be separated and go off and travel into the world of the magical, guided by an enigmatic and imposing Scottish phoenix by the name of Nixon Ash. And his best friend, Johan, is a very tactically minded young man who goes kind of into the world of the technological. So the first story is my road trip story. It really is the journey story, hence the name. As they go off on their journey and kind of embrace these worlds that they've been raised to fear. And then the second one is my war story. They have lived there for a little while in these worlds, and they're kind of coming back together. And if the first book is my Fellowship of the Rings, then the second one is definitely my I just jump straight to Battle of Pelennor Fields. Like it is the big monster battle. And, it was something that I really wanted to write for a long time. I kind of lived mentally in this fantasy world that I've created. I've always kind of got more stories that take place in it in my mind that I'll get to eventually, I'm sure.
And you're married, right? There's a woman who married you with this brain, right?
Yes. Bless. Oh my yes. Which it's kind of funny when a lot of times I'll meet people. I'll meet somebody in this world, and they will have met somebody who is very kind of tied to it as well, or at least at the very least a voracious reader or something. And so I am not married to that. I love my wife to death, and she is not involved in this world at all, and it's all just kind of amazing and wonderful to her to see this in kind of a weird way. She's like, oh, well, I couldn't do that. So yes, but it's okay, because that keeps me grounded.
That's outstanding. Does she read your material? Does she read through everything?
She has not read any of my work, really. I'll say it this way. One thing that we as a couple have always enjoyed doing is I like reading. I like talking. I like giving characters personality through my voice. And I read to her, like as we were older and after we had been married. So I read all of the Harry Potters to her. We'd find a time at night, and instead of watching TV, we'd sit up and I would just read to her, and I read all of those.
That is awesome.
And that is cool.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun. And then we kind of got away from that as the kids were born. And I read to the kids every single night. I still try and read to them. We're busier now. Like if we get home at like 9 or 10 o'clock, obviously I'm not going to be doing that. But sure. I've actually started reading them Catching Hell right now. I take out some of the bit more mature parts, but I can do that because I'm the author and I'm allowed to. But I did read Death Dresses Poorly to my wife when I first had, like, because I was done, and I was like, oh my God, I can't believe that I only, like, edited this one time. Like, is it really done? And I was like, I'd love to read this to you and get your feelings on it. And she's like, yeah, okay, yeah. So we did that same thing, and I read Death Dresses Poorly to her, and she was happy with it. She enjoyed it. And then at the end, she gave me the only kind of criticism I've ever actually taken to heart and put in any of my books. And that was that I had kind of as a placeholder, and then eventually I ended up liking it, I had given the main character our son, our oldest son's name. And
Ethan.
Originally it was a different name. And she was like, I love the story, but he's not the best namesake. And I'm like, well, I needed something that was also kind of millennial, something somebody would have been named around the turn of the century. And my God, turn of the century, and man, that makes it sound like it was like 1900s or something.
I know. I was thinking the same thing when you said that.
But at the turn of the century, I was looking for another name from then. And then that's when I was just like, yeah, no, Ethan. And I'd already got the publication deal with Fluky Fiction out of Maine. And we were going through revisions, and I went to the editor and the owner there, and I was like, can we change the main character's name? Like, how am I going to do it? And they're like, it's your story. You can do whatever you want. So then we changed it to Ethan, and then that's where it is now. But changing the main character's name, it was an important change, and it's the only kind of criticism I've really taken to heart if somebody's read my stuff before it came out. And I think that it was legitimate. I think I had just like put it in there as a placeholder, like I said, and I just kind of gotten used to it.
Gotcha.
But in going back and looking at it, Ethan is not necessarily a character. Like I'd like to think he's a strong character, but not necessarily one you'd want to emulate as a person.
No,
I wouldn't be friends with him.
No.
Yeah, no, exactly. Right. And that's not the kind of thing, like even in just kind of a arm's length kind of way that we wanted to associate with our oldest son. So change the name.
Gotcha. The reason I asked is that because, my girlfriend's going to be my wife in another week, but, I've been doing radio for over the last 10, 12 years.
Yeah,
and she has not really been interested in it. She doesn't listen to my shows. I actually had her on another show one time, and she's a great guest, but she just thinks of it as, well, you just go off and do your little radio thing.
That's your thing.
That's your thing.
Yeah.
And that's why I was curious how that works out with your writing and your wife and how she views it.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's refreshing to, like, I can tell her the stories about what it is I'm doing, and she's more used to it now. I also say that I have only really focused on trying to write and get my writing out there since February of 2016. So everything that I was experiencing new, I was experiencing with her, and I was telling her about all these different things, and she's happy at my successes, and she's sad and upset at my failures and rejections. But at the end of the day, it's still not her world. And I mean, to her credit, she has her own things that she does as well that I am not involved in at all. She's very much involved in art. She's a fantastic artist, and she's incredibly creative, and I can't draw a stick man to save my life. Writing is the only artistic thing that I can do. I can't write or play music. I've been told I can sing, but only other people's work. But like, I can't be creative the way that she's creative. And she's also like heavily involved in things like therapeutic yoga and trying to find ways to help people physically in ways that drugs and narcotics can't necessarily do. And I'm like, wow, that's an amazing thing to do. I could never do that, but like, good for you. Like, you gotta go and do a bunch of courses over the course of a weekend. Great. Yeah. I'll take the kids. You just go.
Well, I'll tell you what, there's two things. Jim and I kind of gave glances to each other like, oh my gosh, on two specific things you said. One, that you wrote this book in 6 weeks and only did one edit.
Yeah.
And number two, I just blanked the last one he just said.
Oh, about, wait a minute. I don't know.
That you've only been writing for 3 years.
3 years.
3 years.
Yeah. Well, so okay, obviously so. You are very creative in this venue.
And any of the listeners who have done the math, they're like, well, he's already said he took 5 years to write Catching Hell. And that when I'd like to kind of say that I had been writing kind of on and off ever since I was in high school, and I had never done it to put it out there in the world.
Sure.
But I had written Catching Hell, and I was sitting on it, and it was kind of going back and forth with it, but it was always just mine. Like, I passed it off to a couple of friends, like, hey, check this out, or like some family members who wanted to check it out. But I'd never really done anything with it. And I remember it very specifically. I was at work, it was lunchtime, and I was, I had this grand idea that I haven't quite given up on yet of doing a poutine review website for Calgary. And I had written all these, I still think they're absolutely brilliant, poutine reviews for all these different ones that I was going around and I was trying, and it was giving me those writing bugs. And then I was like, I'm going to get back into writing. And it was February 29th of 2016. I made the decision to like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to commit to trying to get my writing out there, whether it's on this website or if it's this book or if it's doing anything. And then that's what I really did. I did nothing about the writing community or getting published or finding an editor or a publicist or anything. I knew nothing about it. So it really has been like a 3 year whirlwind journey. So yeah, I did do writing before that, but actually focusing on it to the point where I'm now having a conversation with these wonderful gentlemen, that's only a 3 year venture.
Okay. And you are so perceptive.
You are. using the word gentleman with us is like, yeah. Wow. We just got excited. Okay, there comes the question that we ask all of our writers. Did you ever have writer's block? And if you did, how did you get out of it? And if you didn't have it, oh, well, doesn't matter.
I will say that I didn't, but I kind of have a good reason for not having writer's block. And that is that with my busy life, I only write for an hour to 45 minutes a day. And that is during my lunch break at work.
That's going to be my next question. So
was that,
that was going to be my next question is how often do you write?
Yeah, it is only for that small window of time during the day, because by the time I get home, my wife, she works from home, but, she is looking after the kids and doing her own thing during the day. And then when I get home, I get off work at about 4 o'clock. So by the time I get home, it's about 4:15, and I grab the kids and I go do the thing. I coach my kids, and I have ways or things I got to run them around to. And I don't want to write in the evening at all. I don't want to write on the weekend if I have free time. I get like every other Friday off, so sometimes I'll do something then. But for the most part, I'm doing all my writing at work. But because I have such a small window and I have all these things that I want to get out, it normally doesn't create any kind of writer's block because there's something I can do. There's something that I can work on. There's something that I can be creative with. And I use that tiny little window that I have in order to do that. So I keep enough ideas in my mind and enough kind of like works in progress. I mean, like if you go into my little flash drive that I carry around, that's got most of my writing on it. There's a million different little ideas in there. So I'm like, if something's not really striking me right with what it is I'm working on, I can easily kind of slide sideways into something else.
Gotcha.
I avoid writer's block by not giving myself time to actually get writer's block.
Right. I hear you. Do you find that your characters, when you're in your story, and it seems though you're a pantser, do you pantser just means that you write by the seat of your pants for our listeners. Do you find that your characters drive your storyline?
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Maybe not as much as what some do, because I don't really plot out my characters. Like I don't do like a one page write-up or even like a paragraph long write-up or anything like that. I know my characters and I know how I want them to react in certain situations, and I know what situations I want to put them into. And then they help push things forward. But really I'm trying to tell a whole story. For everything I have written so far, it's always been mostly like an ensemble piece. There's always been at least two main characters, two protagonists of some kind.
Right.
And so I'm bouncing back and forth between them, and I'm trying to balance the story the right way. And they do help drive it, but only in as much as I know how they would react to certain things, and I let them react that way to them. And other than that, I just throw them into a situation and see how I write it, see how they react.
Okay. That's a fair answer. Do you have an agent or just a publicist?
Just a publicist. But if anybody's listening, I've always got ideas and works in progress and manuscripts going. So.
There you go. Well, and I happen to know your publicist personally.
Yeah, well, he is a good man who gets out there.
So, yeah, he is. He's taking a break right now.
A little bit, but that's okay.
Yeah, works for him.
So am I.
Well, right now you're talking to us. God bless you.
That's true.
Well, you know, we're out of time, Mark. This your 40 minutes shot by.
Oh, man.
I'm telling you.
It does that.
When it's a good show, it's a good show, and it flies by. You want to give everybody your email address where they can reach you? And your website, I know, is being currently worked on because I was on there today. Or it's maybe it's finished, but it's...
It should be. I'm glad. I hope it's up.
Okay. It is up. I know it was up because I got on it. But why don't you give everybody your email address and your website if you have it, Facebook and all that good stuff?
Absolutely. So you can find my website at www.markwatson.ca. That's MarkWatson. And I'm very keen on the CA because there is a markwatson.com. And that Mark Watson is also an author from Florida. He's a fantastic older gentleman, and I've had great conversations with him in the past. But that's not me. I am markwatson.ca. And you'll recognize the website because as soon as you get there, you will see the excellent illustration by one of my good friends who I'm actually with the video game company with right there on the cover of, and that is Nixon of the Great Fire and Ash. You can also find me on Twitter and Instagram at Wright Watson. So WRITEWATSON. And you can find me on Facebook at www.facebook.com/MarkWroteABook, all one word, Mark with a C.
I like that, Mark wrote a book.
And, of course, your book's available on Amazon because I was there looking for them today.
Yeah, absolutely. Wherever fine digital
online books are sold,
can be found, you can absolutely find me there.
There you go. Well, yeah, I want to thank you so much for coming in and joining us and giving us your time. I know you're an hour in front of us, so...
Oh, that's okay. That's all right. I've I found myself a nice, quiet place. I really appreciated the conversation, gentlemen.
It was fun having you. And you know, we're going to be on hiatus after June 13th for a while because I'm moving up to the Northwest, so it's going to take a while to get the show back on. But keep in touch with Jerry because she's the one that books you, and make sure that you get back on.
I would love to. I would love to have another conversation.
Excellent. We would love to have you back. So, and with that being said, thank you again so much for joining us.
Thanks,
Mark. And we'll be talking soon, I hope.
Absolutely.
Oh, good.
Absolutely. I look forward to it.
Okay,
good luck with the move, and good luck with the wedding a week from now. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yosemite.
Yellowstone.
Yellowstone. That's right.
You'll get it right.
Yeah, I will.
They're both good.
Okay, well, thanks.
It's that big popular place with a Y.
Thanks again, Mark. Bye-bye.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye. As Mark Watson.
Yes. Death Dresses Poorly.
Oh, my God. What a great book.
And I think one thing we could say is that if you were a fan of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy,
you will definitely like this book. Absolutely. Yes. Well, next week we have a returning guest to the Writer's Block. Let's see who's coming. Oh, Elliot Parker is going to be with us next week.
Oh, Elliot.
Elliot. Yeah, remember Elliot?
No, not at all.
Oh, well, he was with us. Elliot was with us a couple weeks ago, or a couple years ago, actually, and he's back with us on Thursday. And he's got a new book out. And let's see if I can find the name of it. I probably can't, but that's okay. But Elliot's
a
fun guy.
We are a very professional organization.
We are. We're professional radio people. Let's see. I can't find the name of it. But anyway, he's got a new book out. It's a rather short one. But if it's anything like Mark's book, it'll be fun. So that being said, I know, Bobby Jean, you probably tried to call in. I did get a chance to click you in to talk with Mark, so I apologize for that. And with that being said, Russ, thank you so much.
Thank you again. It was fun as always.
This is your last Thursday.
I will be here on
the 13th. On the 13th.
But
yeah,
this
is the last one. We're all going to be here.
Before hiatus.
Yes, before hiatus for you.
Yes.
And before your wedding, so yes. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Jerry's having your eardrum redone a week from tomorrow.
Okay.
She blew it out.
How'd she do that?
I don't know.
Wow. You weren't firing any weapons.
Holding her
head,
sneezes.
Oh,
I don't know. Anyway, for Russ and myself and Bobby Jean and Bob Brill and the Writer's Block, and we're just going to say we're out of here.